Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network.
Brain Injury Radio and Radio Ability are sponsored by the TBI Network.
Find them on facebook.com/TBI Network or at tbifn.org.
Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week, and now, for tonight's episode of Brain Injury Radio.
Hello there, I'm your host, Dr. Doran, and I have a really fun guest tonight, and it's hard to say what he does, because he does a little bit of everything to find the best way to help somebody heal, or heal themselves, or whatever he does. We'll find out. Chris Belfry, and I call this show Natural Healing of Chronic Pain, because he focuses on chronic pain, and a lot of us with head injuries know about chronic pain, because most people have their own issues. Whether they've been head injured or not, most people have their own issues. And Belfry Wellness, his shop, is a place that offers a natural process to release physical and emotional hurts. The use of energy work, body-spirit connection, breath, and energy work allows access to and healing of bodily and emotional trauma. Chris Belfry bills himself as a healer and a coach with the goal of teaching people to resolve chronic illness by releasing their traumas and old childhood wounds. He found this work following a near-death car accident as a child. That incident developed a passion for helping other people. He began his journey by becoming a chiropractor. In order to direct people's healing, he ended up studying many different therapies and techniques. Eventually, he was led to the creation of his own unique healing technique. Because everyone does a little bit something different, but he mixed them all together to develop what he wants to focus on. And his technique uses many different techniques to treat many different conditions. He focuses on the special niche of those people suffering from chronic illness. He has discovered that the most effective way to manage pain is through wellness coaching, yoga, massage, and mind-to-body-spirit connection through virtual appointments. These appointments revolve around energy work, teaching people to live more consciously and consistently in their body, teaching people to be more present in the moment, and this ultimately creates a space for better listening so they can follow the wisdom and guidance from the body itself so it can heal. He does this by teaching people to connect their mind and body by relaxing their nervous system. This helps to resolve chronic health issues, old wounds, traumas, and triggers, so these people can feel more balanced, calm, happier, and in better health. He invites listeners and other people to reach out to his office for a free discovery call to determine if his methods can help you. So I will introduce Chris Belfry right now. Say hello to everyone, Chris.
Hello. Wow, that was a lot to unpack there. Thank you.
Well, you better live up to all the things we said about you now.
Right. Exactly. Wow. No pressure. No pressure.
No pressure at all. So being a chiropractor myself, I couldn't help notice that you want to get out of the way so the body can heal itself. And as an upper cervical chiropractor, that's the kind of thing I focus on. So why don't you talk a little bit about how that healing process...
Yeah, I mean, in terms of like how I do it or like...
Yeah,
the evolution?
How you do it.
Yeah. So really there's two parts of what I do. When we talked, like, in the introduction there, you mentioned, like, energy work. So I created my own energy technique, and it really based on the three facets of our well-being, the physical structure, your nutritional side, so the toxins you put in your body, and then the emotional component. And that's something I do in person. I do distance work as well, but, what I realized with COVID, it was an opportunity for me to help people help themselves, because I'm in the industry, just was in chiropractic. It was like, hey, doc, I'm broken, fix me. And as much as, I love doing that, it's just, I wanted people to empower themselves to help themselves. And, part of what, my vision has always been and is to help people as fast and as efficiently as I can. And, if I could have like a one button push that, would heal people in one visit, that would be something I, wanted to learn. And that's why I had studied so many different things to better what I did, to improve, to make it more effective. And for me, the missing component was, or what I noticed was that emotional aspect. Chiropractic really deals a lot with the structural component. There's like nutritionists and, functional nutritionists now dealing with the emotion, the food aspect and the toxicology of like the stuff you put on your body, toxin-wise. But I just felt that emotional aspect was missing. So, that was more my shift into last year, is just getting online. So I'm helping people and I'm coaching people to teach them to relax their nervous system. So this is where the healing comes in, is really just starting to relax your nervous system. Once you start to relax your nervous system, you can be more present. Mm-hmm. Not just present in your body, but you're present in your mind. And then you can actually be aware of your thoughts and your feelings. And once you become that aware, you can actually start to work through your pain, your trauma, those old wounds, triggers, limiting beliefs, because we store it all in our bodies. Our stress is, we hold all that in our bodies. And, a perfect example is when you're stressed at work or you get cut off at the, on the highway, or you're stuck in a traffic jam. Just notice the next time you feel that way, your body, condenses. It gets heavy. There's a density there. It closes off. And that's the awareness of, once you start to aware of, like, when you're triggered, that's the same thing. And, we can go on and on the depth of why that occurs, but that's how I look at it from a pain point of view and how we can resolve it.
Mhm. Mhm. So, how do you get in touch with that hidden emotional core of people?
Yeah, great. A great question. Yeah. So, So when I first started, a lot of it is like intuitiveness. So when I first started working with clients, I help them and I guide them to there. But eventually, what I teach people is really trying to use your triggers of today, right? Like, if you're dealing with some kind of chronic pain, or, maybe you're going through a divorce, or you're having difficulty at work, whatever that trauma is today, or maybe a trauma you remember as a child, or in the last 10 years, there's something that's a trigger, right? And if you think of those things, whether something happened as a child or even in your 20s or last week, if you start thinking of that event, you do start to close off too. And so it's using those triggers and then just teaching people to retrace that pattern to when it started. And that's different for everybody. But you know, may not consciously know, and it's not therapy. You don't have to, you know, review your whole life history, because, you know, maybe that divorce in 2009 that was ugly and created a lot of pain and hurt and frustration or anger, rejection, whatever that feeling is you're still bringing that now into, you know, 2023. You're still holding on to that. You're bringing that into your next relationship if you haven't processed those feelings. And so it's really going back to, you know, even that divorce in 2009, I said, is really probably stemming from some other, you know, maybe abandonment issue as a child, maybe some attachment issue as a child, maybe feeling unloved as a child. And so you may not remember that time, you know, that you felt unloved, you know, because some of that could have been a simple situation as your parents had a second child and you felt unloved because, you know, why would they need another baby, right? And it's nothing that happened other than just, you know, life happened. But as a six-year-old, you made it mean like, oh, mom and dad must not love me. They had to have another baby.
Right,
and so
right.
And so you may not remember that, but the body remembers it. So I just guide people in a process to go to that six-year-old little you to release it.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Yeah, because we often don't remember the things that set us off, quote unquote.
Right. Yeah. You don't have to have the, you know, I like to call it capital T trauma, like obviously like the obvious physical abuse, physical abuse, you know, mental abuse or some kind of like significant trauma that you remember of, you know, your parents divorcing, maybe there was a death, but there's so much more small little traumas along the way that you don't think of, but they are still, you're still holding on to it, you know. So people ask, well, I don't have any trauma. I'm like, well, if you're not breathing, you don't, I mean, there's no possible way that you don't have any trauma, because, you know, you wanting a red bike and you got a green bike as a six-year-old may not have been a big deal at 40 years old, but when you're six, it was the biggest deal.
Oh, yeah.
You know, right? And there's a lot of things that you're not even inherently knowing, you know, even, you know, babies that are, you know, just are kind of like, what do you call it, sleep training, or you do like cry, let them cry them to sleep. A baby only has one way to communicate, and it's to cry. So it's either needs,
right,
you know, mom's love or dad's love. It needs, you know, its diaper changed, or it's hungry, right? And so when we just let them cry to sleep, that's creates a lot of abandonment issues for children, you know. And you know, I see that even, you know, being a parent myself, I would take my child to dance lessons or, you know, preschool or whatever, and just leave her there, and I would walk away, and she knew we were coming back. And a ton of kids that can, you know, likely that had some kind of, if I were to dig a little deeper in these parents, they'd have some kind of sleep problem when they were doing that sleep training, because parents are leaving and the kids are freaking right out, you know. It's just, and they have to stay in the room, or they have to kind of wait at the door or whatever they do, and then they just slowly go away. And that was never the case with our child, because we never did that.
Okay. Yeah.
So, you know, that's just as now is a trauma. There's some kind of, you know, some, whether it's feeling unloved or, you know, abandonment issue or, you know, attachment style issue that's possibly there as well. It's, you know, creating, you know, maybe an issue in your relationship with, you know, maybe you don't have a good relationship with your parents or your partner. You know, there's so many different things that, you know, like that it can create.
Right. Right. Yes. And that kind of interferes in whatever it is you're trying to do.
Right. So from a, like a nervous system standpoint, it's your body's holding on to that memory. And it's, you know, and you might have heard it as like shadow work or the ego, or, you know, cleaning out the closet, or, you know, all that stuff you're just kind of holding on in the background. or holding on to is just that dark side of you that you have to look at. So, you know, your body is actually trying to protect you from that pain again. So, you know, when it comes up, it's your body's mechanism to protect you. You know, it doesn't want that hurt again. So if you had rejection as a child, like that I had, you know, you create all these little mechanisms to prevent that rejection from occurring, you know, and, you know, I did a great job at masking it, and I had no idea until, you know, I realized I had that aha moment of rejection, and that was my wife, you know, at the time saying, I love you, but I don't love you, and wanted to end the marriage, and that was, like, the biggest rejection, and it was like, oh, my God, and then I just started to see the pattern my whole life of, like, you know, hiring staff just because I was afraid of, you know, a client, you know, a patient not coming back or a patient canceling or a patient, you know, not wanting to come back. And a lot of times that wasn't the case, but this ongoing fear of like that, if that one did, it would be devastating, you know, to relationships, you know, was crazy for me, how I protected myself. I had created this impossible list of like, you know, I would watch The Secrets, you know, way back when it first came out. And so I had created this list of like the ideal partner, and, you know, the list was just, you know, the likelihood of that happening was like 0.001%, you know. She had to be like a Barbie doll woman, no kids, and she couldn't like cats or have cats, no horses. It was just an absurd list that I had created, but it was just like building that wall so I couldn't get rejected, you know. And even what I would date, it would be really short because I didn't want to be the one getting rejected. So after about like 3 months, if it was kind of like maybe developing something or maybe not, I'd be like, put the brakes on, and out of that fear of being rejected. And, you know, I'd act like a jerk to them sometimes just so they would dump me. But, you know, knowing that, you know, that was my own issue, but, you know, and it was just, I saw all these patterns of this fear of rejection that, you know, stemmed from a childhood memory. You know, it's absurd. It's crazy to think, but we all do that. We all have those. We just have that aha moment or don't. Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny what people will do to protect themselves.
Right. Like that pain of rejection. You know, I remember bawling my eyes out. You know, when one of the first girls I liked, you know, dumped me. You know, I remember bawling my eyes out, getting cut from a hockey team, you know, as a kid, and, you know, all these little events, like, sure, we cry, but, like, mine was, it's crazy. I remember even getting called up to play in a game, and I was a smaller kid, and the team we were playing was a pretty big and a lot of, like, heavier kind of hits, and the coach of the team was a little bit worried, so he kind of said, well, you probably shouldn't play, and so I started crying, and that time I was like a teenager, I think, you know. It was just crazy, you know, just because that was that rejection again. And it's just, you know, these little patterns that kind of you have to retrace back to all these times. And again, you know, for clients, they don't have to do, like, see all the different patterns like I did. But, you know, I just have been doing it a long time. And, you know, I do a lot of meditation and clarity work on it. So, you know, I have that awareness, but it's not essential to work through the problem.
So why is it that chronic problems are what you're drawn to?
Right. So, to me, you know, that's chronic pain is or chronic, any kind of chronic health issue has some emotional attachment to it. So a lot of people have tried a lot of different, you know, therapies that are more often not physical, or, you know, so it's chiropractic or physical therapy or, you know, massage or, you know, something that's based mostly on the physical aspect. So they're fixing all that. And maybe they're, you know, they've eaten fairly well, or, you know, they're taking medication for it, and it's nothing's working. And oftentimes, a lot of these chronic health issues have some underlying unresolved trauma. And so that's why I like to work on chronic health issues, because that's, you know, the key, the missing link to help them move forward. And it's, you know, if I feel like some of it's structural, I have partnered up with, you know, people that deal in the structural aspect, or, you know, the nutritional aspect, if I feel like their diet is contributing. So it's not like, you know, and I used to do it all myself, but I just feel that, you know, I couldn't focus on, there's so much, you know, just overload, information overload for the client from me. So I just was, I dial more into just what I love to do, and then I refer to other options if I feel like that's what's needed for them to move forward or have the success that they want to achieve with their health issue.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very interesting. So I'm curious, I want to hear about this accident when you were a child.
Yeah, so when I was 13, I was in a car accident. My parents were going away for an anniversary, and I was going to my grandmother's cottage for the weekend with my sister. And we were driving, and my grandmother fell asleep at the wheel. And in some parts of, you know, the land, I live up in Canada, so there's a lot of rocks, and any of those rocky, you know, states, you know, instead of going back in the old days, you'd go up and down the mountains, right? But now they blast through them, so those little rock cuts. And she'd fallen asleep, and the car hit that rock cut. And so I had my forehead had hit the seat in front of me. I was in the back seat. And that was like those old-style car where they had the ashtray on the seat in front of you. And it left a huge laceration. So actually, from, like, looking at me versus my grandmother and my sister in the car, most people thought like I was looked the best, like the best out of the deal, because they had some broken bones and different issues. But as I got to the hospital, I was complaining of like pain in my stomach, and so they couldn't figure out what was going on, and then they did a surgery, exploratory surgery, and they saw that my bowel had been lacerated, like cut in four places. So they stitched me up, but the recovery didn't happen. There was some kind of like some issue that was not, I wasn't healing, like it was no transition. And I can't remember the entire story, but I know that my parents grew up in an age where you don't question the doctors. And so the doctor was firm that there was nothing wrong, but, you know, the nurses were telling my parents, like, look, you know, there's something wrong. You need to get a second opinion. And even, you know, a nun had come up to my mom, and they're like, we're really worried about your son. You really need to talk to somebody else. So finally, they, you know, it wasn't getting better, that they decided, like, that they needed to talk to another doctor. So they talked to the doctor that did the surgery. And he came to see me, and then whatever happened, they were said, like, I was within, you know, hours dying. And then next thing, he did gave me something, and, you know, I was back and, you know, started my recovery. So it was in that moment, though, that I really decided that I wanted to help people. And so I went on this journey to help. And so I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I knew that I loved sports and science. So I went to school to become an exercise scientist, knowing that that was kind of going to be like a stepping stone to something more. So I didn't know if it was going to be like, you know, athletic trainer or physiotherapist or physical therapist or a doctor, but I knew I didn't like blood and stuff early on in schooling. So that was out. Or pharmacy, but that was kind of boring. I kind of shadowed that. So I didn't really know exactly what I wanted to do. And my mom was seeing a chiropractor, and where the school I went to was a tiny little school. Like, there was like one-on-one interaction with the main professor, and he was a sports psychologist by, you know, his doctorate. So we talked a lot about like placebo and the, you know, obviously the benefit of sport, like, you know, the benefit of exercise in the human body and, you know, sports psychology and how even, you know, that was in the 90s, how, you know, pro athletes were already using visualization for golf and baseball, basketball. So, you know, I was like, wow, love that aspect of the naturalness. So that turned me on. My mom was seeing a chiropractor, which fit the bill of anything. I'm like, oh, I want to do that. So, yeah, I started my journey to become a chiropractor.
Mm-hmm.
And as a kid, I asked a lot of why questions. And so, you know, why I left chiropractic was really, in chiropractic school, I learned chiropractic can help 75% of 75% of the people, and I wanted to help everybody naively at the time. You know, 25-year-old brain or 22, wherever I was, you know, and so I started studying every chiropractic technique I could. I probably studied, you know, a good 20 techniques. And what I saw with chiropractic is like, I wanted to get to the root of the problem. So I had a huge, you know, going back to my list about cats, I had a huge allergy to cats, like ridiculous. Like if I knew, I would know within seconds if the person had a cat, because I always start to wheeze. Yeah, it was like the cat touched me, I would get hives. And then like, and it would be like my breath, if I was stayed there, it would be like the asthma would be so bad that it would be impacting my breath for like a week or more. And it would affect my sports. I played hockey, and I remember like getting yelled at consistently by the coach different times because, I mean, like I couldn't do the drills like I normally would. And he's like, "What's going on?" I'm like, "I was like sucking wind," and so I finally went to see a doctor, and he just told me to stay there. And he literally said, "Swore," he said, "Stay the F away from cats." So I went to chiropractic school, and I would be around a cat, and I'd get the adjustment after, and the, you know, the symptoms would clear, but it would only clear until the next cat. So I was like, well, I'm not really getting to the root of the problem, you know.
Right.
Or why do people have to keep coming back? I mean, you know, I get the maintenance, I get that philosophy, but in my mind, it's like, if I was really getting to the root of it, then, you know, they should be good and, you know, never, you know, come back with something else. Or so that kind of made me kept digging and digging for more and more answers. And that's when I eventually created my own technique. And in that practice, you know, even in that practice, you know, asking why, because some people would get better and never see them again. There was some that, you know, I saw, you know, semi once in a while, regular or different issues. And then some people that kind of that same idea with chiropractic. And so I was like, why do like that 20% have to keep coming back or whatever that percentage was? And that's when I realized how the emotions played a role in it. And I was like, oh. And so early on in my practice, I was starting to work on emotional stuff. And, you know, unbeknownst to my clients, they didn't really know that I was working on it. I would talk to them from a structural standpoint, like, oh, it's your hips being out, that's why your back hurts. Meanwhile, I was working through, you know, the abuse they went through from their uncle or something that happened
right
along the way. Because, you know, this was like in the 90s. The 90s, right? So people weren't talking about emotions like they do now and how they relate to our physical well-being. So if I were to say, hey, your back pain is because of your abuse, you didn't really resolve from your childhood, they'd look at me with like 10 eyes or 3 eyes and say, I'm crazy. My back hurts because, you know, I work as a, you know, a farmer or whatever you do. And I'm like, well, yeah, that's contributing to it. You know, so I couldn't speak to them in that context. I would do a little bit, but not, you know, not to the extent of like I talk about it now. And that was really the evolution of like trying to get to the root of the problem, because it was those people that weren't getting better that I was wondering why. And so also that part of why people don't get better is that they don't want to look at that issue sometimes. And, you know, hey, that's on them, because I get those clients and I'm like, well, because I do offer that free discovery, and in that call, I talk to the client, like, how deep do you want to go? I mean, part of this issue is related to, you know, maybe you have to resolve this issue with your ex. And they're like, oh, I'm not willing to do that. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they think if they let it go, it's going to be like a forget, or, you know, especially if, you know, something traumatic has happened. And this isn't for them. This is for you to feel free of that. The story doesn't change, and how you how you feel about the situation, you know, doesn't change. But the emotions you've had that you're holding on to, that's, you know, really keeping you small or really from moving forward, is really the impact that's there, right? It's, so that's the message I have for those people, is that it's only hurting you. So they hurt you that time, and, you know, maybe afterwards, but they're still hurting you now because you're not letting that attachment go. And as soon as you let the attachment go, it's not the story is the story, and you can still, I'm not saying you have to be, even if it's like, you know, someone in your family, like the situation was related to an uncle that abused her, you know, that you don't have to be best friends with the person now that you're like, oh, it's like, I let it go, we're going to be friends now. That's not the case. It's like, I'm letting it go for me. Whatever happens, you know, that happens is still the story. So it's not like you're going to be feeling like, oh, now we're going to be best friends. That's not what happens when you let it go. You let go of the emotion, the hurt, the pain, the suffering, the anger, the whatever, the feeling that's there that you're holding on to in the story. So.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very true. I mean, people don't realize how much it impacts their lives.
Right. Yeah, I mean, we don't realize.
Somebody who's in the past,
right,
you know, impacts their lives right now in the present. And, yeah, until you resolve it, it's going to.
Right, and you can look at it like, you know, a simple one is like that person who finds, finds himself in a bad relationship only to get out of that relationship finally, and then find it another person who might have a different color of hair, a different job, but is the exact same story happens. You know, you haven't changed, you know, what's missing in you to feel better about yourself, to create a better relationship. It's like, you know, I look at it like people have a lot of like holes in a jar that's leaking. And so if you have a lot of those holes, you got to start patching those holes and fixing those holes, or they're going to keep leaking. And when you keep leaking, you know, we often find partners that's going to start to patch that up, but eventually that's not going to last too long. And then you both start to leak, and then the relationship gets, you know, quote unquote toxic, which is just a blatant term of like no one taking responsibility for anything. But, you know, which is, a, you know, sad frame. I feel like, you know, I recommend clients really taking responsibility for their life. And if that means whatever happened is your responsibility. And it's not to say that other people have, you know, done other things, but how do you respond? What did you contribute to that? You know, my wife, obviously I talked about, you know, I love you, but I'm not in love with you. And she was having an affair with somebody. And so it's easy for me to say, well, I'm a victim to that story, and, you know, blame her and be resentful. And, you know, all the feelings of that, you know, stem from hearing that news. And, you know, I'm not going to lie, I went through those periods, but using what I teach, I work through that. And I felt it all, and I got clear on it, but I had to take responsibility. You know, I could sit there and say, oh, she's, you know, toxic, narcissist, whatever the common terms are, when codependent, whatever people, you know, using today, like narcissists. I mean, you know, if you really look at what a narcissist is, it's like we're all narcissists. I mean, everyone has a little bit of spectrum of narcissism, and it's really, you know, just a blatant term that people throw a dart at to blame somebody else for, you know, for a failed marriage. like, what did you contribute to that, you know? And
yes.
So I just looked at it like, how did I show up in this marriage for her to feel the way she felt to have the affair? Even if maybe I could have been like, you know, grade A and had everything, you know on that, maybe she still would have, but maybe she didn't. It didn't, to me, I had to look at it like, how did I show up to be a better Chris for my next relationship so it doesn't happen again? And that's really that when we own that part of it, right? So she has her own agency. She did what she did, but how did I contribute to that? How did I, you know, make her feel that way? Possibly not saying I even did, but I can see how there are times I showed up of, you know, maybe she didn't feel heard enough with me. You know, maybe she didn't feel seen with me, you know, and I can see how that, you know, happened. I remember, you know, the first time, you know, that I remember, like, I clearly, vividly remember this happening. And it may have happened before, but this story I remember exactly because she was pregnant and I tried to initiate sex and she said no. And that was like, boom, that rejection. Chris became that five little boy. I remember, like, really, you know, rolling over in bed and starting to pout like I was that five-year-old that was, you know, issued that first trauma of rejection. And understanding now after of like really diving, doing a deep dive into understanding relationships and the masculine and the feminine, and that's, you know, a whole topic, you know, onto itself. But what I realized is that she probably felt a certain way and I only added to that. So I put up a wall in that moment and she put up a wall in that moment. And, you know, we have all these little moments and then we get further and further apart in a relationship and it becomes a narcissistic, toxic, or whatever that story may be, right?
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. So you're saying that if you didn't heal yourself, you wouldn't be able to help other people heal.
Right. I think everyone has that ability to heal. I just think, you know, now I can help at even a different level than I could because that was, you know, that stuff I didn't know. So it's like now I can add this to it. And, you know, I definitely feel like if I got to do what I teach, you know, or, you know, kind of looks bad. I mean, it looks bad, but, you know, it's hard to, you know, to be authentic and have integrity if I don't, you know, do what I preach. So, you know, I work on myself and do those things to improve, right? So, because I want to be a better person, I want to be a better dad and a better partner and whatever is next for me, a better son, a better brother, right? A better friend, yeah.
Hmm.
Better human, a better, you know, practitioner, absolutely. If I can, me clearing myself helps people at a deeper level, then yeah, absolutely, that's what I want to do.
Well, that's some pretty, you know, lofty goals, but at least you have goals because that means you do care. You are trying. And that's
right.
A lot of the difference right there.
Yeah, which could be like another whole aspect of like people pleasing and saying no and a lot of things that, you know, we don't do, which are also part of like issues that people may have that are holding them back, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's really like not just, you know, me working on me makes me, you know, happier and more engaged and more, you know, more in the moment, you know, you can, you know, not so triggered and just, you know, like, you know, it's crazy how little things, you know, that would bother me don't bother me, you know, like silly things like my daughter spilling water would, you know, drive me, you know, I would get upset and it's crazy, you know, and a lot of it's, you know, my parents would do that and not to blame my parents. I think that's just, you know, my ex would do that. It was just, that just seems like everyone just yells like, oh my God, water everywhere and make a big deal. So a lot of stuff is learned too. You learn patterns from your parents and teachers and, you know, people you look up to, right? And so
mm-hmm.
some of these patterns aren't necessarily, you know, something you created, but something you may have learned along the way. And so, and I just realized, like, it's just water. Like, you would never yell at yourself for spilling water. Or you may swear and you may call yourself an idiot or something, but, you know, that's just you. Why would you do that to somebody else? So, yeah, I you know, she spills water, and she spills water. We clean it up. It's not a big deal.
Yeah, very interesting. I mean, yeah, so you're saying if you look at it from just right now, what has actually happened, you get a totally different view of it. And if you look at it as, you know, this big emotional trauma from the past.
Right, yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. And as soon as you kind of let go, like process it, it kind of, it's no longer a trigger. So definitely her spilling water was a trigger, and then I would go off on it, you know, and get angry. But as I work through that anger, all of a sudden it's no longer a trigger. There's no switch that goes off, right? It's, you know, like having a client who say has had anxiety. She had anxiety for large groups. She had a hard time going to weddings and even going to church. And she's, you know, Indian, so they have huge weddings. So that's like was a big deal. She had a hard time going to these weddings. And so we worked on it, and, you know, within a few sessions, and all of a sudden she's like, it's gone. I can go to these big events. There's no anxiety. There's nothing there. It just happens. Like, and it becomes natural. It's just like second nature to do it. So it's not like the fake it till you make it. There's no like thinking about it. It's just like, okay, there's a wedding. I'm going to get ready and go, just like you or I, who it's not an issue going to these weddings. That's what happens when you let go of the story that's it's connected to that emotion or that situation that she's feeling.
Huh, very interesting. Very interesting. So, in looking over what you had to say, you mentioned several times body-spirit connection. Can you talk to me a little bit about that?
Yeah. Right, and so, so really what I do is really connecting that, you know, the mind, body, and spirit is really part of the process is, you know, teaching people to live more consciously and consistently in their body. And so when I talk about relaxing your nervous system, it makes you more present to your thoughts. So that's the mind, right? You're listening. You can hear when, you know, your body says you look fat in that dress, or, you know, you're not good enough when you try to play a sport. You'd be aware of that. And then you become aware in your body of, like, when I think of being not good enough, I actually feel that in my chest, or I feel that in my throat, or thinking about that time, you know, dad said something to me or yelled at me, you know, I feel that in my, you know, my abdomen, or wherever you feel it. And that's that mind-body connection. And as you kind of get deeper, and I teach people to, you know, and the breath work is really getting to that essence of who you truly are, that nothingness where there's no past, there's no present, and all we have is that moment. And it's from that moment you can actually heal. So it's in that moment people can get clear, and that's really the spirit of it, right? That's that essence of who you are. You know, that's that presence that's, you know, will be here when you're gone. It was here when you came, right? It's that spirit of it.
Okay. Yeah, so how did you realize that work was so important? Because of your own healing from emotional stuff?
Yeah. How did I know it was important? Well, I guess, yeah, I mean, I loved, you know, since I always wanted to help people, and it was just this innate desire, I mean, you know, and, you know, I truly believe I was healers in other lifetimes, just because I had this knowing, this knowingness of, like, you know, because how do you come up with your own technique? It was this knowingness of, like, learning about things. I'm like, oh, you don't need to do that. And I would never, you know, go into a, you know, as a person, say, oh, that's a waste. I would learn it, and then I would go home and practice it differently. You know, maybe how you put your hands, or how you do something, or how you lay the body, or different these things. And it was ways to get there quicker to the result that I was looking for. And so by mm-hmm. listening and I was realizing that I could get where I want to go quicker. And, but then just that, I loved that. Like I loved, you know, the body, and it really got, you know, learning chiropractic and learning the early on in the structure and understanding that and how the organs and how that relates to the body and, you know, noticing patterns in the body of like how, you know, if you have a high hip on the right, you know, people had tend to have like, you know, I was mapping the body and you can see things, patterns. Like if people have a high hip on the right, they tend to have frequent urination, get up at night to go, you know, and, you know, I had a kid who came in and he had the biggest like pelvis torque that I've ever seen, where the hip on the right was the highest I've ever seen in, you know, my career. Even to this day, I've never seen anything that high. And he came in with back pain or hip pain, I don't remember, but obviously had pain. I mean, it was like significant. And I said to him, I said, "Oh, do you pee a lot, or do you know?" And he said, "Well, a little bit or whatever." And he never told me I was seeing an aunt referred him. So I was seeing the aunt, and she was like, he was blown away that you knew that he peed. He didn't tell you, but he could never sleep over at a friend's house because he would always wet the bed through, like, even as, like, up until, like, adolescence or maybe longer. Mm-hmm. And then once we balanced that pelvis, that went away. So similarly on the left side would cause digestive issues and people would have constipation or diarrhea. And there's these, you know, mapping of the body was interesting. And that's not blanket across the board, but, you know, even when you see a distribution that way, there's menstrual problems with women. And it's really interesting how the body, you can map out the body, and similarly with organs and where organs and how they would sit and affect emotions. And so, yeah, it was really, you know, as I started to realize the structure, then sort of the emotion played. And I was watching clients with emotional issues start to clear as I worked on them. And that was thrilling too, because it was those people that I was struggling to get better was, you know, finally, you know, pushing the needle, you know, further. And then, you know, those were affecting our organs as well, which was, you know, it was just really cool to map out the body and just understand the body better. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not sure if I answered the question, but yeah.
Yeah, that was interesting. Yeah. Okay. So now let's take a little break right here, because you are inviting people to reach out to determine if these methods can help you. How do people reach out to you if anyone listening wants to know?
Right. So they could go to my website. It's www.belfry, BelfryWellness.com. I also have lots of videos on YouTube under, I think, Chris the Healer, maybe, I think. A friend started my YouTube channel, Chris Belfry, on YouTube. So, yeah, I'm on Instagram. So, really, any way, but, you know, if they jump onto my website, there's lots of ways I can book a free call and, you know, and we can talk about your story, your situation, and see if I can help. If not, you know, I connect with a lot of different people and, you know, I can direct you somewhere to help you in your journey to healing
good.
And wellness.
Yeah. Well, good. And Chris, it's also important to mention that your name is K-R-I-S, not C.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Yeah. K-R-I-S, yes. Thank you. Yeah, and there's another great opportunity. I have a program. It's called Awaken the Inner Healer, and it's a 7-week program, and it's really about, you know, just letting shit go. You're going to learn just to some great tools along the way to kind of let things go. And it's a course I run, you know, regularly. So, yeah, it's an opportunity for people to want to, you know, check out as well.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and I should mention, too, if I keep checking on my website, I will have create an e-book about 12 ways to relax your nervous system. Because,
uh-huh.
You know, obviously, breath work is really important, but there's a lot of other ways we can learn to relax your nervous system. So it's really helpful when you're stressed. You know, you need, you know, you're triggered at work, or, you know, you're triggered by your spouse, or something happens where, you know, overloaded with stress, you know, there's a really some simple tools you can use to kind of, you know, lower that stress in the moment, so you can kind of reset yourself and go back to whatever you're doing without that constant stress that's holding you back.
Very interesting. So I want listeners to know that I've been asking Chris all the questions, but if anyone listening on Thursday night has a particular question or wants to say something to Chris, please call in to this radio station, 424-243-9540. Call in that number and press 1. That way I'll see you have a hand up and you have a question, and I'll be able to call upon you by your phone number and we can answer your question. Okay, so if anyone tonight we're recording this has a particular question or comment or issue, please feel free to call in and state it. I don't see anyone right now with a comment to make, but if you are interested, just call in that number, 424-243-9540, and you can ask the question or make the comment. Okay, now back to you, yeah. Back to you, Chris. You say you work with people with chronic illness. I mean, how does one determine a successful intervention when you're working with somebody that's been there for, you know, years and years and years?
Yeah, I mean, I guess every story is different. So it really has to, you know, part of like, you know, the call being free is not just like, oh, do you want to work with me? I have to figure out if I want to work with them. Some people, unfortunately, as much as they think they want to feel better, they don't. And I talked about that one woman who, you know, had to work through her ex-husband's issues. She's remarried, and so, you know, intuitively they knew that was causing some of her. She has neck, and she was having upper shoulder problems, chronic, and so. In talking with her, I'm like, well, this is actually stemming some issue from there, which was just a trigger for something probably deeper as a child. But we kind of, that was kind of where we would have to start. And it's not therapy, but it's just a landing spot where we kind of start to do a little bit of digging, right? And in that, you know, just kind of learning a little bit about her, and because really she's remarried and her husband rubs her down all the time, gives her massages. And so I think, you know, and just kind of feeling what I understand is that she's likely has some kind of like, you know, her love language would be touch. And I think there's this fear that, you know, if she loses this pain, she's not going to get the attention that she did.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So
yeah.
People have to look at the payoff. And so sometimes the payoff is greater than the pain, and people don't get that, you know, because there's this idea that, you know, they want to be out of pain, but they don't, because they get a lot of attention, they get a lot of, you know, whatever. So a kid, you know, acts out, we know, because of he's looking for attention or she's looking for attention. Well, an adult will looks for attention as well, and unfortunately, it often comes as pain because you can't act like a 5-year-old when you're 65 years old, right? I mean, some do, but it really, it doesn't go very good, you know. Like I had seen my friend's mom a couple of times. I'd seen her, and she had chronic health pain all over, and she was going off this medication because she was going on this new quote unquote. You know, miracle drug. So she came to see me when she was in no pain, with no medication. So I saw her, I think 3 or 4 times, and she could barely get on the table or off the table, and I had to help her. And by the third visit or fourth visit, she's getting up and down by herself, no problem. But she kept saying there was no change in her pain. No change, no change. Right? And I know him personally. And, you know, most of my friend's life, he was an only child, super spoiled. You know, even to this day, his parents, you know, the guy's in his 40s. I mean, his parents would go to Swiss Chalet every Sunday. Whether he goes or not, that he got Swiss Chalet, his mom would make him lunch, you know, every day. He's 30 years old, 35 years old. You know, he lived at his parents' house in a single tiny little single bed till he was like 30s. I mean, in his 30s, and he was making, you know, like six figures. I mean, he could easily afford his own home. Like it was, you know, it was crazy. And but finally she was getting attention because it's like, oh, how you doing today? How you feeling? Right. And so it's still attention that she didn't receive because all the attention went to her husband and her son and no attention. She was a stay at home mom. She didn't get a lot of attention. So now it's showing up as pain. So she had no desire to get out of pain. Right. And so it's really just finding those people. I've had, you know, people on disability, you know, they don't, you know, I have one that's, you know, swears by me, recommends me highly. She's seen like leaps and bounds improvements, but she still has pain that she deals with, but not to the extent she's mobile and doing things, but she still has a chronic pain because she's like 7 years old and there's no way that she can like not say she has pain and still be on disability. Right. So that part of her brain, as much as she may want to get better, won't allow her to because of, you know, this, her story. I worked on a lawyer who was in a car accident. She was in a taxi cab and the taxi cab was in an accident. So she's a lawyer now. And now she is suing the CAD company, the city, the other driver. And for her too, she'd gotten to a point where she was a lot better, but the pain wasn't going away. She's like, Chris, when's the pain going to go away? I'm like, oh, when the court case is over.
Right? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And
it was
then
like,
there's people like that have that every day. Oh, sorry.
No, I was going to say, when I was in clinic in school, one of my patients had, you know, epileptic seizures. She's had them her whole life. She's been on disability her whole life. She begged me to help her get better, but do not stop her seizures because she didn't know how to live if she wasn't on disability. And she had to remain on disability. And so she was like, no, you can't stop my seizures, but I want to feel better. It's like, well, we'll do what we can, but the body heals itself when you get on the right path. So,
right. There's no little button that you push that says, oh, I'm going to, you know, do this, right? It's crazy.
Yeah, exactly.
as much people say, like, oh, because that's, you know, I push some buttons, they think, you know. I'll just push the button here to, like, get rid of my back pain. I'm like, it's not like
that.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, it doesn't work like that. So we've had someone call into the show. Now, if you want to ask a question, you have to press the number 1, so I know you have a question. But if you don't have a question, just want to be on the show, that's fine. Just stay as you are. So either press 1 or stay as you are. So go on, Chris. You were talking about, you know, the woman who was coming to you.
Sorry, I lost my train of thought.
Yeah. The
other option too is like people that have like the stress that's ongoing. So there was another guy that I had, and you know, and this was kind of as my exploration and understanding how our emotions play a role in it, is that this man, he did really well. Like he would go, you have no pain, but it would only last like 4 to 6 weeks. And he came to me one day, he's like, Chris, you know, I referred a lot of people to you, you know, and they've gotten better and they don't even see you anymore. They come in for other issues. He's like, well, like when is that going to be me? And this guy hated his job to the point where, you know, he had a countdown, right? And it's not like, oh, I got 3 more months. It was like, I got like 648 more days of work, you know, like 3 hours and 10 minutes. That was his his view on it, right? And so I said, well, probably when you retire from work. And so he quit work. He eventually retired. And then I didn't see him. All of a sudden he was gone for like months at a time, and he hurt his back one time working in his backyard. But for the most part, his back was great. And then so he would come in with his wife, and the two of them would bicker in my office in the waiting room, and I would hear him bicker and bicker and bicker. And then she would come in and bicker about him, and he'd come in and bicker about her. And, you know, two people that probably, you know, need to work on some things or more. So she retired from work. And then guess what happened to our poor friend? He had to started coming back again because he's now has a daily stress again in his life, right? So we have this ongoing stresses, you know, that impact our well-being. And so, you know, those are the people, like, you know, you can still work with them, but you just have to, you know, let go of the story that's happening, you know, but they have to want to let it go. And that's, you know, so that's probably, you know, me, right. Me not letting go of the relationship, but a lot of the stories you're putting in there. And that's probably like a big, you know, big challenge for sure in that context, for sure. But but that helped me to realize like how emotions played a huge role. It was just like those aha moments that, you know, why did he not get better and these people did, you know? It's all these little cues along the way that really, you know, kind of helped shape what I do today. Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. So you were telling me a little bit before the show, Chris, before the show began, you were telling me that you work through your own stuff because everyone has a story. If you want to make a difference for that person, you have to be able to affect that story in some way.
Right. Like, yeah, so the story doesn't change. It's really just, again, how you feel about it. So, I've been in personal development and meditating for, you know, 15 years or more. And, you know, because it, you know, I loved how, you know, I was feeling, I was letting go of some of the stuff that I was holding on to. And so I think it's important. I went through a lot of different stuff. I've been, you know, through bankruptcy. I've been through, you know, marriage ending, you know, I've had some health issues myself, and, you know, and that had its own issues come with it, because being, you know, this healer, how do you A, be sick, and B, not heal yourself? And that was something that I had to, you know, struggle with myself and work through that, you know. I understand it's nothing's necessarily easy, but you have to have that desire to just, you know, wanting to be the best version of me, to be a better, you know, like I said, a better dad. Especially when I became a dad, it's like, how can I be a better dad, a better, you know, friend? And I remember, like, just how you show up, everyone else changes. Like, I had taken this weekend seminar and the Landmark Forum for those people, and you know, I left there and realizing how, you know, I had this crazy fear that, like, if I was around my sister, people would think we were, like, you know, dating. So, like, I would walk ahead of her, or I'd walk behind her, and I was, you know, sadly to say, I was, like, embarrassed, like, to be around her, to think that we were, like, together. And, you know, right. And so as soon as I let go, I worked through that. I was like, wow. And started inviting her to, like, so I'm like, let's do things. And that changed. And, like, you know, we go to dinner now, and totally cool, no issues, you know, now. You know, even when I was, you know, back when I did the work, it was like I had joined Ultimate Frisbee League, and I invited my sister, you know. And my sister, because I knew she wasn't much of a extrovert. She's very much an introvert, and mm-hmm. totally different people. I'm more the extrovert, and I remember mm-hmm. like after games, a lot of the teams would meet at a restaurant and a bar, and have food or a drink, and I would sometimes not even go by the end. I would go just so my sister would have people to, meet and talk to and be in a group. And
you're a good brother.
And eventually, yeah, thanks. Not at first. I had to do some work. But a lot of times I wouldn't even go anymore, and my sister would still go. And, so she had met friends from, playing in this league. She still plays in this league. So, contribute, but I changed, and I just started to see my sister becoming a little bit more of an extrovert than she would have been. I mean, she still won, but I mean, she had made those steps to do things, and it's just seeing that is just awesome too. Like by me changing, others will change.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. Yeah, we do find that, don't we?
Yeah. But it's a lot of times that's why partly is for me is getting a coach. Like people think if you want to be good at something, I don't care what it is, you have to find a coach or find a way to get better, whether, you're watching YouTube videos, when I created the technique, as much as, I said I intuitively knew stuff, I still needed input. I needed some help, some advice, some support along the way. And because if you don't know what you don't know, like even in marriage, I thought, okay, I'm just going to try and be the best version of me. But, I was sinking and drowning in that marriage as well, going through my own stuff and feeling my own resentment and anger, and knowing what I know now about, the feminine. So my, they can sense how, you're feeling, which isn't a quality men contain typically, right? And so so she was knowing that I was angry and resentful, and so that only compounded what was going on at the time. So, and it doesn't necessarily do with her, but it was just all these things that were going on. And, knowing what I knew was, challenging, because there was no, I didn't have any kind of like support there. Until I finally, when it ended, I went and realized, like, I got to get some help again. And that's when I started to realize and see what I was holding on to, because there was that shadow work, that stuff you don't know, and so I started learning tools to discover, like, hey, what else is there? What else can I unpack there? Like, what else is hiding? Because, it's trying to protect us, right? It's trying to keep us safe, or feels that that's what keeps us safe. So we don't do those, we don't step out of our comfort zone, or we don't move forward because it's safe. And a lot of that is like, people pleasing, not saying no, procrastination. There's a lot of ways that we are mechanisms of just us, having some fear of moving forward.
Yeah. It's funny the way different people have different ways of expressing things.
Right.
You have to find the way each person expresses themselves and learn from that.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, we all, a lot of that's, communication and based on, our own, like most relationships, not even, marriages are from that context, friendships. We, like I said, I use like this bucket. You're kind of like, how do you fill each other's bucket? And eventually, it just doesn't work anymore. Same with friendships. And that's when, you see yourself leaving friends, or different, friends you've had for a long time just don't serve you anymore. You're in different spaces, that just not, they're not helping you, move forward to fill your buckets. And a lot of times your relationships and intimate relationships, the best way to actually reflect what's really happening. There's this mirror happening, right? So a lot of what you don't like in that person, or they're showing you often of what's really inside of you. So to me, it's always an invitation of what's there for me to learn here. So any kind of challenge, any kind of trigger, you know, when I get angry, I'm like, okay, what's, you know, what's there for me to learn here? You know, what's there for me to grow? What's there for me to process? Because it's a gift. And I say that often to clients, is that anger is a gift. And why? Because it's just telling me that there's something inside of me that I need to work through. So instead of looking at it like, damn, I got angry again. Okay, it's just an opportunity for you to move through that into something to clear. And that's the way, you know, I would approach that.
Right, right. There's always something.
Right.
Or more
there's
than
always,
one
thing. Right. You know, there's always something to work on. Right. There's always something that comes up, whether it's like, you know, you want to ask for a raise, but you're afraid to, you know, working on weight related issues. A lot of it is like you're trained. I mean, on a lot of stuff from childhood, you know, like when I was a kid, like, you know, I couldn't wait to, like, get to the outdoor rink or go outside and play. Like, I was outside on my bike. I was outside all the time. So, like, the faster I can eat my dinner, the faster I was outside, right? So, you know, I learned that dinner would last 5 minutes in my house because I would be in and out, you know, bigger the bite, right? And, you know, that's something I've been working on now, just kind of starting to I got a coach related to like that part of my life, and just like, how can I be more mindful in my eating, and what am I, it's not necessarily what I put in my body, it's just like, why am I putting my body, what am I thinking at the time am I putting my body, like sometimes, you know, I was reaching for food more out of just like boredom or loneliness, and I don't typically feel lonely. I did, you know, after my separation, but after, you know, I'd work through that, but then I was some along the line, I was just like, why am I eating this? And, you know, the more you kind of mindful of like taking more bites to, you know, to take a little longer, you know, usually I'm finished my meal way before, you know, everyone else at the table. And I realize like I'm finally not the first one done. So, you know, I'm being more mindful of these things. Right. And that's, you know, the process of like, you know, I teach people to become in your body so you can be more mindful. So, yeah.
Mhm. Yeah. Very nice. So, what was your first experience with energy work?
My first experience. Yeah, great. Yeah, my first experience would probably, you know, like really in chiropractic school, I think, but like, I don't think knowingly, I didn't know it was energy work, but there were some techniques, you know, even sometimes I feel like an adjustment is partly energy work, because really to move a segment of the, move that segment of the bone almost seems, highly unlikely. Some techniques, yes, but, you know, a lot of times probably no. But anyways, so I guess my first real knowledge, you know, was early 2000s, I would say. So in early 2000s, I wanted to learn more and more because I wanted to help people. So I was really open to learning anything. So there's different workshops I'd taken. I'd taken Reiki, but there was even techniques before that were all based on energy and muscle testing. So I was always very open-minded because I had that idea of like I remember even when I first started practicing, a, 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 client or another chiropractor that I went to school with. He was graduating when I was just kind of started, but we were both Canadians, so we were in American school, so all the Canadians kind of knew each other, and he actually played hockey too, and I had played hockey, so we saw each other on that hockey team, and but I remember him coming to see me, and because a lot of them were threatened because I was stealing some of their clients, and I never looked at it like that context. I was just trying to help people, and but they were coming to see me versus them, and I guess we've all been there, maybe, or at least a lot of us have been, there, that, you have to provide for yourself and your family, but, I wasn't trying to take anything from him, but he came, and he's like, oh, whatever you do is still chiropractic. I said, well, there's over 100 chiropractic techniques. I certainly can call it that, and that's when I told him, if I had to climb a tree in the middle of Africa to help people more, then I was willing to do that. And so that was really like that idea of like, I'll listen to anything if I can get it to help people. And so that, really allowed me to, create what I did. And a lot of that was early on with energy work and different forms of energy work. And as I started to process and realize, like, most things are based on energy. And we talk about energy is just that we're all energy when we have something moving. So even at the very cellular level, there's movement, which means there has to be some energy, right? So even at the very smallest particles, we have movement, which requires energy. And so, which kind of allows to, like, frequency and density, which, frequency is, often part of, like, we talk really that raising their people's frequency to being in a lower frequency to a higher frequency is really part of where the healing occurs. So, that's why frequency machines are effective as well, right? Because you're really changing the frequency of the person, which ultimately changes their density. So, yeah. So it was really early on, like right out of chiropractic school, and when I started getting into it and realizing that what I was doing still was effective, but wasn't, there were still things that I could improve on. There was still we could still grow from that point on. And so I started learning as much as I could.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was reading some things you said here. You're talking about relaxing their nervous system, because not a lot of people talk about relaxing the nervous system.
Yeah. So, it's kind of like what happens when you got to think of the nervous system is really like mainly like the two parts. So the sympathetic nerve part of the autonomic nervous system. So you have the sympathetic and the parasympathetic system. So really, if you were to see a bear, what are you going to do? We're going to run, we're going to fight, or we're going to freeze. And so we all know that, and that's the sympathetic nervous system. So what happens in the body? Well, your body drops acid in the body, becomes more available. You start breathing, you start to sweat, your blood pressure goes up, and you want to be able to, react to this bear situation that's happening. And similarly or oppositely, you have the parasympathetic that does all the things that are, done automatically, pee and poo and inhaling and sleeping, all the things you don't think about, and breathing, all these things, right? And so what happens is that we're living in a society where you don't have a lot of worry of bears attacking you, right? There's not that intimate threat that happens. But we're still inundated with a ton of stress. This constant, fear in the media. I mean, there's a constant stress for people, right? So first thing is to turn that off. But, and not watch the news. It's nothing positive. I mean, so they used to end news in a nice positive story. That's all gone. It's all just full-time, 24/7 of fear porn. And so we're that's just what we watch in the news or hear on the radio, but your own life, you got responsibilities at home and stresses with your career, stresses with your relationships. You got kids who, you know, got a baseball and football and, you know, hockey and all different sports you got to take them to. And then finally the weekend comes. So we're constantly bombarded with, you know, stress and constantly triggered by different things, you know, like a simple thing like, you know, a song is playing on the radio when your, you know, your girlfriend broke up with you. And that's devastating. You know, that relationship you dated and that was your first love and she broke up with you. Well, that song now has imprinted in your body as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so when that song comes up after the breakup, it still would make you cry. And, you know, maybe for, depends on how long, could be years later that you still remember that time and that brings tears to your eyes. And then eventually now you're 30 or 40 years old, you have your own family, you're married, you're happily married, you have your own kids, but that song comes up on the radio again and it still triggers you and you have no idea why. You don't think about that breakup, you don't think about that girl, but the song still triggers your nervous system. And so we have all these, you know, constant, triggers on our nervous system, so it's constantly firing. So that leads into like cortisol and adrenaline going in our bodies, which, you know, creates an adrenal fatigue, and so could lead to weight loss, we only hope weight gain, and all these other sleep issues and all the other issues that would, you know, relate to that in, with this extra cortisol and adrenal fatigue. So, you know, it's really teaching people just to learn to relax that nervous system so it's not constantly firing, where you start to give yourself some moments with some great solid breaths. You know, and breaths are really important. We can, you know, talk about how breath work is also important. So for me, I teach really breath work and to relax that nervous system. And it's really connecting to your body. So once you kind of get triggered in your body, and I teach a process of like actually like, you know, going through the process of like relaxing the nervous system by through the breath work. So, you know, makes people more, when the more you practice, the more you can just kind of like be in the moment, be still with yourself, which is great. So if you are, so say you know you're going into a meeting that's stressful, maybe you got a job interview, maybe, you know, you got a, you know, possible promotion at work, and, you know, it's just take a minute and just take some solid breaths and just relax yourself and go into the meeting that way. You'll be in a much more powerful place because you'll also be more present in your body. So you'll come from a better place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. So would you say you do meditation then every day?
I used to do it more frequently. I do some kind of like stillness or meditation or breath work. I typically recommend and do is like a morning routine, and that morning routine for me could be anywhere from journaling to, usually a combination of journaling, maybe a little bit of exercise, breath work, meditation, sitting in stillness, a lot of different options.
Mm-hmm.
There's many different forms of meditation,
yeah,
many forms of breath work. So, you know, it really just depends on my state where I'm at, because, you know, there's a more masculine practice of meditation, and that helps me get more grounded and balanced. And, you know, there's a feminine meditation I'll do if I need to be more in my feelings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's when it comes to breath work, for me, I teach people, like, you know, the process I teach is through the mouth, but I let people know, like, a simple practice, like, if even people like have chronic health issues, a lot of that can be resolved through breath work. I mean, it's crazy how we don't have enough, we don't breathe in enough. A lot of us are just such chest breathers, right? And we just breathe in and we don't really use that full breath. So if you watch like a baby, a baby breathes with his belly, and that's really how we should be breathing, a big full breath. And so, you know, we talk about like blood pressure. It could be resolved with more oxygen in your body. You know, it could affect your heart rate. I mean, affect digestion, your fogginess, brain fog, memory. You're pumping. So what happens is you're pumping unoxygenated blood throughout your body. So your heart's working, but you're often sending, you know, all this blood, but it's not oxygenated. So it doesn't have oxygen in. So just like it's like sending empty vessels through your body that's not doing anything. And so that's why a lot of times you're having this blood pressure problem or heart rate problem, because you got to work extra hard to get blood to your working systems. So a lot of times when we're doing nothing, you know, when we're sitting at the computer, we still have to digest our food, and which is muscle, right? And if we're not breathing, you're not digesting your food properly. So it has an impact, you know, throughout your whole system. So just like set your alarm every hour and take 5 deep breaths through your nose. And I say your nose because nitric oxide gets released in your nasal cavity that increases your oxygen absorption by, I think, 20 to 30%. 20, I think it is. 20 to 30. I can't remember the exact number. But it increases your absorption to oxygen. So it's a great little practice to get more oxygen in your body.
Mm-hmm.
Because most people don't. And they're like, well, I exercise. Well, you're only breathing those deep breaths to exercise. Once you're done, then, you know, the practice will stop. And there's great ways of just like, if you can hold your breath for, I can't remember the whole technique. I think if you can hold your breath for 30 to 40 seconds, you know, if you can do that without, you know, coming back and needing to like breathing like you just ran a sprint, then you're not. But most people can't do that. So,
right.
Yeah. So it's a simple tech. A simple way to kind of really improve their health is to breathe more.
Yeah, something simple as that. People don't even realize.
Right. Yeah, there's lots of little things like, you know, that can improve your health. Breathing, a little bit more water. Simple things.
Yeah. Yeah, my husband's always accused me of not drinking enough water. Yeah, so I have a bottle of tea sitting here in front of me. I mean, tea, okay, some people say it might not be water, but it's mostly water. I mean, come on.
Right.
But it's warm water. And you know, if it's warm, it's easier to drink, I find.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Everyone, yeah, I mean, yeah, whatever people have. To me, it's like whatever it's going to take to get more water in people, because that's another area that could really improve.
Because, I mean, our brains are mostly water. We need water.
Right. Our body's mostly water. So, yeah, you definitely, you know, and 70% of what you drink should be water, right? So pure water. And, you know, people say, I don't like the taste. Well, add, you know, so many things. Everyone has lemon. You heard of lemon, but you can add lime, and you can have, I've seen, cucumbers.
Yeah. Or tea bags.
Radishes in there. Yeah, there's so many different things that you can just flavor your water. Someone else gave me another great one, and I totally can't think of it now, but there's so many little oranges you can put in there, obviously, apples. There's lots of different things you can put in there to give it some flavor.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and, you know, if you don't like the flavor, drink water that has no flavor, you know.
Right.
Because the stuff you get out of the tap might or might not be good, you know.
Right.
You know, my husband started drinking distilled water and found that it increases water consumption by like 200%, you know.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I think distilled water is actually the best water. I think one of the better waters to drink, too. Because why did I read that, too? There's a lot of benefits to distilled water.
Yeah. No, it's just kind of funny. You know, we don't even think about some things that are so obvious.
Right. Well, you got to, like, you can't. like, if you look at it, you can't live without, you know, you can live without food for, you know, months. You can live without water for days. But
yeah.
You can't live without breathing for, you know, minutes. So.
How long, yeah.
Right. So you got to put that into your, you know, package of like, okay, water, or sorry, breathing, water, right? And we consume ourselves with food as being important, but, you know, outside of, you know, water and breath work is the key importance. And, you know, it's kind of like people, you know, don't put any money into their car. Just, if you were to say, like, to somebody, like, if you were to get this one car at birth that's going to last you your entire life, what would those people do with that car?
You're speaking to somebody who has a bunch of 91 cars in their driveway, yeah.
Right. Well, that's fine. But so you have that 91 car, you've been keeping it your whole life, but not looking at it from a car's point of view, but really, like, you're going to baby that thing. You're going to put in oil changes. You're going to keep it in the garage.
Yeah.
This car has to last your whole life. Well, that's your body. Your body has to last your whole life. And
yeah.
People don't spend any money on it. They don't take care of it until it's like the last moment. Then they're like, oh. And then they're willing to spend every dollar that they have to get three more days. You know, it's...
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it?
Right, it's crazy. You can take a few... Spend a little bit of money now to help yourself tomorrow.
Make all the difference later. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Exactly. We each have our own ideas, but you got to remember this machine in which you live has to be there for you or you won't be living.
Right, right. Exactly, right? If this machine, you know, this car is not working, your body, the car, is not working or breaks down. I mean, a lot has to do with your own not keeping care of your body, right? So,
yeah,
it's really spending some quality time fixing you, like working on you. And regardless of where you're at, I mean, there's some form of, you know, stress or whatever is going on. Just breath work, water. It's great tips to leave.
Yeah, I mean, the stuff is crucially important to keep your life going.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Any questions? I'd love to, if there's people questions.
Yeah,
there,
we have people listening, people calling.
Yeah.
Into the show, but you got to press 1 if you want to ask a question, okay? Maybe you're just listening, but, you know, you can always reach out to Chris afterwards. He told you how to get in touch with me before. Chris, why don't you tell people again?
Yeah, so it's, they can reach out at Belfry Wellness, so www.belfry.com. And at the bottom, there's a little free, little complimentary introduction call where, you know, lasts, you know, 30 to whatever it's going to take, but to work in through and see if, you know, we're fit to work together. Or if you just have a specific question and you want to reach out, hey, I'm open to talking to anybody. But if people have a question tonight about their, you know, they want to talk about an issue going on, we can do a little bit of a dive into it, or they have a health concern that they want some advice on. Yeah, I'd love to support you however I can. We have some time, and, you know, it'd be great to,
so
to support you.
So feel free to ask any question you have. Call in 424-243-9540 and press 1. That's if you're listening on Thursday night when we're recording this. 424-243-9540 and press 1. That means you have a question and we will call upon you. But at the moment, we don't seem to have any questions. So I want to ask Chris about, we're talking about releasing traumas and old childhood wounds. And what happens to a person who doesn't release them? will they keep showing up in other ways?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it's kind of alluded to a lot of different things when we talked, is that your body's protecting you for something, but your body wants to get rid of it. So it keeps showing up in your life. And so it shows up as, as a person in your life that's, because I tell people like, oh, I'm just going to leave my job. I can't get along with this guy or my boss. I'm like, oh, so have you worked through that with that person? I'm like, no, like we don't get along. And I'm like, about how you're feeling about it? Like, no. I'm like, well, the next job that you're going to find that same person, it might be, a woman and she's in another area department, but until you work through that, or it's going to be someone else showing up in your life to help you work on that issue.
Yeah.
Your body wants you, the universe or God, or whoever you hire up there, wants you to work through this so you can be your best version of you. And then if you don't work through that, it's just going to keep showing up and showing up. And then it shows up as a pain. And then we're like, oh, it's just a little back pain. And then we're just going to ignore it. We're going to, we're going to put some A535 on it. We're going to take some pills and it goes away. But then it shows up again and again. And your body's trying to tell you that they've got an issue. And until you get to that, to the root of it, then it's going to keep showing up. Or it shows up as something worse, as cancer or something, that's deeper down that you need to let go of. But, there's typically, like, the other thing, I talk about working with pain is that, 99% of the people that have some kind of chronic health issue has some kind of traumatic experiences as a child. Vice versa, if you have a traumatic issue, the likelihood of you having some kind of chronic health issue is extremely high as well. So there's that correlation between the two. And most people want to relate it to something outside themselves, but everything's really within us, right? And people say, well, how does that heal? Your body wants to heal everything, just like a cut. You don't ask your body to heal, it just naturally heals a cut. So, there's nothing in this world that hasn't healed, whether it's toe pain or cancer. It's not everybody, obviously, that's not a blanket term for everybody, just because of a lot of moving parts in it, but it's just saying that the body can and is possible of healing those things. So you just got to give the body that optimal chance, and it starts with you taking responsibility for your health and your well-being and what's going on for yourself. So or do something different, because whatever you're doing isn't working. So it's just really
changing
it up, right? It's that rat on the wheel. You just keep spinning and spinning. So just try something different,
Oh, yeah, because the body...
it's not the job.
The body will keep coming at you with different ways of healing, and you just keep ignoring them, but just new ways will show up.
Right. Absolutely, right? And just like my rejection story showed up again and again and again and again. I just mentioned a few, but, I could sit here and, take up the rest of the 20 minutes of our call just talking about all the various times, rejection showed up for me to work through it, and I just ignored it. I just pushed it away. I just, covered it up, ignored it, and, resisted it or tried to, to think around it or whatever we try to do to, work through it. It's really just, getting back in your body. And there's just other practices, and it's not just me, you'd have to see. But even, even yoga is a great practice to get people in their bodies. But when you're in yoga, I love the idea of just like feeling your body, getting into your body and feeling the tightness and moving through that tightness and breathing through that, rather than just like that robotic, like, up, down, left, right, moving around with the poses of yoga, which is really actually
interesting too, because it's a totally physical movement, but it has effects. I mean, we have several, like a group of yoga practitioners in our practice, and they have just different ways of manifesting the same problems, but just different symptoms and different stuff going on. It's fascinating how different people take those same emotional things and turn them into something totally different in the body.
Right, right, right. And really, one thing too is adding to, you know, this, what's going on, but yoga is really taken off, especially like in with females. Females like go way more than males. But yoga is a masculine practice, right? It's linear up and down. Shavasana is where you lay down and meditate. It was actually developed by men for men, but it came to the Western world in this. When I first started, it was all women and just me and maybe another man, but it's masculine. And so women, so many jobs, and this isn't, you know, and it's not about sexuality. It's an energy. Both men and women have masculine and feminine energy. And it's just, you know, that's part of like what happens with people is that we don't know where we're in. And so women, most jobs are masculine jobs, where, you know, bookkeeping or money or something that's like leadership, any kind of like role of, those are all masculine. And it's not that women can't do those jobs. And some of those jobs are best done by women, because especially in a boardroom where it takes, you know, listening and, you know, working through, you know, different personalities, you know, that's great. But it's just understanding, like, am I masculine? I go home and I go to the gym and I'm in my masculine with yoga. And then I come home, I'm in my masculine. And then it's just like my husband is masculine, and it's just like bump, 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 right? It's we have to really like soften. So I tell people, you know, those women in a masculine role, after that yoga, do a little bit of a dance movement. And when I talk about a meditation, you know, it's movement in the meditation, you know, so a little bit of a dance at the end. And I know some yoga practices are doing that now, but, you know, it's just to be mindful of the audience of like, you may want to add that instead of the quietness, have a little dance party at the end. And that's that more of that feminine balance that they may look for. And hey, if they want to stay in their masculine, great, but it's just having that awareness that that's where you are.
Yeah, things we don't even think about, you know, but one thing to think about is always, always be careful what you ask for, because the universe hears you and it just may come back in a different form than you asked for it, but it will come back somehow.
Right, right. Absolutely. Right. Yeah, and that's kind of where, you know, it starts with, like, sending attention of, like, you know, what's your intention? What do you want to create for yourself, you know? Creating that intention of being well. Like, hey, I want to be well. And start with that, like, you know, intention to be well. So even if you feel like maybe you're one of those people that like, I don't want to be better because of the story that you're having, that there's a bigger payoff. Well, set the intention of like, I want to be well, and just using those words, put that somewhere where you are every day, just like be well. And you know, you're going to slowly start to shift that mindset, because that's what you're seeing every day. So maybe it's in your bathroom mirror, maybe, you know, it's in your car. You know, I remember friends used to laugh at me because I had little notes all over my car, my house. I still do. I mean, I still have them, because that was really the very first moment of me growing. Somewhere along the lines of chiropractic school, I just felt that I was often very negative. And so I wanted to be a little bit positive, more positive. I just put be positive. And I wrote it nice in pen, actually. I just kind of went over it like thousands of times, be positive. And I just hung it where I studied. And just eventually I kind of started to embody that presence of being more positive than that, you know, that Debbie Downer Chris that would show up. And then I'm like, wow, that really was cool. And so then I was like, I got into practice. And again, in Landmark, I actually learned, which was cool. I'd already done it before Landmark, but then I did it. They had talked about that practice too. And I set the intention of my practice to be more empowering, inspiring, and fully self-expressed. And that's who I started to embody, that person. And it was a great too, because I had made a little note card, and then I laminated it and I put it in my wall, like put it where, like I put it in my pocket, so it would be with my wallet. And every morning I would grab my wallet and this little card, I would read it, put it in my pocket, you know. And eventually you kind of would like maybe read it in a day, but eventually just subconsciously you knew that was there. And so in the mornings I stopped reading it, but I was still setting, it was an anchor, so some NLP programming. It was just like I was anchoring that thought that that's who I want to be. And then just slowly, that's the person that I was more empowering, more inspiring, more self-expressed. And that was really just, that was a shift of like me changing that in myself. And it's like you put your, you know, I put my hand in my pocket or just touch my leg and feel that. And it was just like a constant like anchor, like that reminder. And I didn't have to read the card. Your body already knew. And that was like kept resetting the hook more or less, right, of moving forward with it. So, you know, that's a great practice for people to do out there as well.
Yeah, it's really reinforcing it in a way that your body can grasp, because we all learn things in different ways and find the way that works for you and use it. You know, you, Chris, make note cards and hang them around you. I mean, I have to hear something to really understand it. You know, my husband has to teach somebody something. That's the way he gets it. That's why we were such a great parent, our practice school. He
nice.
Taught me and I listened. We both learned.
Right. Yeah, that's your learning style. Yeah. Yeah, I was much more visual and kinesthetic, so I had to sitting in a classroom and listening to a lecture was difficult because it was like a waste of time. So I would often bring a book and read. I mean, no offense to the teacher, the professors. It was just like, you know, if I had the notes, right, I would just like, oh, I'll study the notes at home or read the book. Because I wasn't, it's hard to be that auditory guy. That wasn't my skill. So I totally relate to that.
I see somebody with a question here. Let's stop and ask. I'm about to turn your microphone on. I mean, I don't know what your number is. You're obviously calling from probably another country. It starts with 529. I'm going to unmute you so you can say something. Hello there.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you fine.
Perfect. Well, this is Robbie Ann calling in, and I had a question for Dr. Chris. I'm wondering, do you feel that you're just as successful with people calling like virtually versus in person?
Yeah, that's a great question. Thanks, Robbie Ann. I think... yeah, definitely. Definitely a different modality, but definitely in a different process, but definitely just as successful. The only difference really is there's a little bit more work on the person in a virtual situation, meaning that, you know, but what happens is it speeds it up. So, you know, if someone's working in person, well, I got to do the work. So it's more reliant on me. So that means more time, more money, you know, a longer period of getting better. Whereas virtually, I give you the skills so then you can now do it on your own. So it's like once you have the skills and you practice it, it actually becomes a little bit more automated, where it's a lot of it's using programming, some NLP programming, where a lot of it's more automated, where your body starts to process things so quicker. So then you can do this on your own. And that's, you know, my goal is to have people be able to help themselves, because I can't be there when, you know, your neighbor who hasn't, you know, been home for 10 years shows up and starts screaming because, you know, you stepped on his grass or your dog pooed on his yard and I can't be there in that moment. So, but you have now the tools. So when your dog poops in his yard and starts screaming at you, wants to, you know, shoot your dog, well, then you can deal with that, right? That right? And it's not on me to have to process that for you, because then, you know, later down the line you get so angry you don't talk about your neighbor, and now you have back pain for it, or hip pain, or, you know, neck pain maybe from that. So, so that's a great question.
Well, thank you for that answer. I'm enjoying the
Thanks
show.
Thanks for calling in. Thanks for calling.
Bye now.
Bye.
Goodbye, Maria. Well, that was nice.
Yeah, that was a great call.
Okay. So, virtual's just as good for the work you're doing.
Yeah, it's just a different process, you know. It's really, instead of like putting me in charge of your health, it's putting yourself in charge. But the result is the same. And it's really, realistically, if you actually take the what I teach in a virtual context and do the practices and continue the process, you know, and do that on a daily basis, or even, you know, on a regular basis, weekly, that would be, you know, far better for you than, you know, seeing me forever. Because, you know, for instance, like some of your issues, like I deal with people, are more structural based, or something else that may be going on with a little bit of emotion, and the back pain clears. But it's those people that have that chronic issue, that have, you know, chronic stuff going on, or they're stuck in their life and they want to move forward, or they've really, you know, limiting beliefs that's stopping them from moving forward in their business, or, you know, maybe have reached a plateau. You know, some of that skills you can now take and reuse and reuse and reuse. Whereas, again, like I said, it's not on me. So when, like, going back to that dog situation or whatever may happen, you're in a car accident, you know, and, you know, all of a sudden maybe you need to see someone because you hurt your neck, because structurally you're, you know, you're crooked because of the car accident, and you get that fixed, but maybe there's this ongoing stress of the financial setback that it has, because maybe you didn't have insurance, or your insurance fully didn't cover your car, and now you have this financial burden that's now creeps up, that's now causing you to have shoulder pain, right? It's now, if you have the tools through the virtual learning, you can work through that shoulder pain. You know, for instance, you know, I had some neck pain one day, and I'd woken up with it. So like most people say, oh, I must have slept funny. But I knew that that wasn't the case. But I thought, well, maybe I slept funny, but it didn't go away. So late in the day, you know, I know some points that do work for my neck and or for people's necks. So I started doing those points, and it didn't go away. And it might have lasted into the next day. And I'm like, what's going on? And so I totally forgot. I'm like, well, let's check in. So I checked in with myself, and I figured out the problem. At the time, my mom had graciously stayed to help myself with my daughter. My daughter was doing virtual school because of COVID, and so she moved into my space, which, you know, I've been living, you know, alone since my separation with my daughter. And, you know, my mom has come, and I was grateful, superiorly grateful that she was coming. But obviously it was a transition for me that I wasn't, you know, fully embraced that, you know, this neck pain was coming. I realized it was like literally having this pain in my neck because of my mom, you know, in my space. And so I worked through it, and I worked through that feeling of, like, you know, the how I was feeling, like how the heaviness and where I was feeling that in my body, and the neck pain went away. And I did have a little small conversation with my mom about, like, hey, maybe, you know, because I don't watch a lot of TV, and I just had a little conversation, and everything worked out perfectly. And I wasn't upset had I been triggered by it and been upset, like this neck pain, and, you know, overreacted and, you know, came off and not fully authentic, then it could only cause more of a disruption in the relationship. But, you know, once I cleared it, it wasn't an issue anymore. But, you know, I could see how if I said a few things just to, you know, how I was feeling about boundaries and stuff, great, because that was really the issue. Is just like my boundaries are feeling threatened, and, you know, I established some boundaries that worked for me and worked for her, and everything was fine. And the rest of the time that she was there, I had no problems, no pain, and I was grateful for her to have come. had I stayed that way, you know, by 3 weeks in, I was, you know, I might have been willing to strangle my mom to say, hey, get on the next plane. You've got to get out of here. And that's what a lot of people do, right? But I worked through it. Or I could have, you know, yelled and screamed and created a fight with my mom. And then, you know, 3 years later, we're still not talking because of something, you know, ridiculous that, you know, that I didn't work through.
So, yeah.
You know, this is some real life scenarios where, to me, I love sharing those because, to me, those were always impactful for me hearing other people's stories. Maybe it wasn't your mom in the same situation, but by listening to my story, you can relate in some form to help you work through whatever you're going through or to be that trigger for whatever might move inside of you.
That is absolutely correct. I mean, it's funny that we have hundreds of, you know, just countless clues all around us all the time, you know, and sometimes we understand them and sometimes we don't. But they're all trying to tell us something.
Right.
In some way. We have to figure out what they're trying to tell us and why, and then do something about it.
Right. So it's just a matter of like that's part of the relaxing nervous system because then it quiets your mind. So then maybe you can be present for that moment to listen. So it's a simple ask, like, what's this trying to tell me? What am I protecting? Or whatever questions. And then you just listen for what comes up. And sometimes you get nothing. Sometimes the ask is really what the body wanted you to do. It finally wanted to be acknowledged. It finally wanted to be heard. It finally wanted to be seen. You know, it's just you've been ignoring your body for the last 20, 30, 40 years, and now you're checking in and it's like shocked, like, whoa, what's this? Right? So it may take a few, few moments to try, and it's just the body may not respond because it's not used to you asking. So just keep trying.
Yeah, very interesting. This is something I, you know, you don't really think about. And it's like, yeah, maybe just asking the question is what's important.
Right. You finally want, it's just that it's like hide and go seek a lot of times. And that's, you know, we've stored all this stuff. We're really all these chipmunks. We've stored all this stuff in our bodies. And now it's winter time and you got to, you know, get rid of it all, or spring or whatever the story is for chipmunks. But that's the idea, is like just discovering it's a hide and go seek of like asking, you know, and then that's the opportunity to release it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Very nice. So you've told us some stories about how body or how your thoughts reflect themselves in your body. I mean, do you see much of the opposite way of thinking? I mean, the stuff that's physical traumas reflect themselves in the way you're thinking.
Yeah, absolutely, right? Because, you know, that's part of even like a physical trauma. So even if you're working on, you know, chronic pain, you know, the physical trauma, you know, if you've been, you know, dealing with, and that's why I partnered with people that deal with the physical too, because, you know, if, you know, you maybe have a sports injury, right? But now you can't play golf. Maybe you're a big golfer, but you hurt your hip or this chronic hip issue because of maybe displacement or, you know, the issue may be. But now that's affecting your emotions, right? If golf is a way you release stress and you're not golfing, that now it's kind of compounding things. So, you know, it's definitely, you know, both part and parcel. So it's not like, you know, one or the other. Often they'll come together, or often it's one or the other. But, yeah, chronic pain, if it continues, yeah, it's stressful, right? It's like you can't pick up your grandkids or you can't, do the things you used to do because of this, you know, the chronic pain that you're suffering from.
Yeah, that's very true. Well, we have this voice coming in here telling us that we're about to be cut off. So do you have anything you'd like to conclude with?
No, I really just want to say thank you. This was an awesome, amazing call, and I've never had such a platform for so long to talk about so many different things. So I thank you, and yeah, I'd love for people, if they have any questions, you can even send me an email directly at chris@belfrywellness.com if you have a thought or a question, whether it's about the show or about your own health. I would love to connect with you as well. So thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chris. And good night, Chris, and good night, listeners, and good night, everyone.
Yes. Good night, everyone. Thank you so much. And stay tuned for my new book, too, as well. That would be coming.
Thank you, Chris. Okay. Good night, all.
Yep. Yeah.